Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
This week on RealityCast, I'll have an interview with Dr. Marty Klein about sex panics, an illustration of one sex panic in action, a discussion of Mike Huckabee's evangelical dog whistles, and an update on the South Dakota Birth Control Protection Act. Stephen Colbert now moved to my number one spot of celebrity crushes. And it was this that did it. A clip of Colbert trying to talk a lobbyist from the Human Rights Campaign into being straight.
I don't get it. Women are so attractive. Do you not? They're so soft. They smell great. You know, let me lobby you for a second here.
Sure.
Women. They have great things, you know. They got great, you know, parts. There's so much more, you know. There are a lot of options. Let me just put it that way. Let's look at it practically. There are just way more options.
That's it? That's your lobbying effort?
Let's see, they're soft, they smell good, they have vaginas.
Let me assure you, the look on the guy's face when Colbert says vagina is the funniest thing that's happened on TV since the writer's strike got underway. Now that Huckabee is falling way behind in the Republican primaries, he's getting a little desperate and has resorted to the only tactic he really seems to know how to employ, which is to thump the Bible even harder. He was bad about using coded terms that only make sense to the religious right before the primaries heated up, but now he seems to be talking only in arcane biblical allusions. It may not be the best strategy for attracting votes, as NPR discovered, because no one can figure out what he's talking about. Their reporter took a tape of Huckabeeisms to the Washington Monument and asked various tourists if they understood his allusions.
In November, as Mike Huckabee surged in the polls, a student at Liberty University asked him what was driving his startling success. His response:
it's the same power that helped a little boy with two fish and five loaves feed a crowd of 5,000 people.
Oh, that's when Moses was out had to feed all the people, the multitude of people that left Egypt. Is that what it was?
Letha Anthony from Mississippi was close. The Bible story did involve food, but the allusion was actually to Jesus feeding the hungry crowd.
Most people they asked didn't remember that the story was Jesus feeding a hungry crowd. Let me make it clear that they made sure only to ask self-identified Christians these questions. The next clip was a quote of Huckabee claiming that he was a small stone, an allusion to the story of David killing Goliath in the Old Testament.
Smooth stone is even more effective than a whole lot of armor.
Maybe something to do with the war? I don't know.
That was Dan Booth. Here's Mike Allen. They're both from Alabama.
He's talking about peace, resolution of peace.
Only one person got that one right. Here's the last one.
Effectiveness than all the gold in the world.
I have no clue. No.
Do you know what a widow's mite is?
No, no. I thought a mite was a bug.
Is it a spider or no?
No.
No.
Daria Tutanico and Richard Pettit miss this one as they walk to lunch on Pennsylvania Avenue. The widow's mite refers to a poor woman Jesus observed giving a penny to God. It was all she had.
Of course, all of these rely on the King James translation of the Bible. NPR did find one woman who was able to grasp all these allusions, and she was a member of a born-again megachurch. Clearly, this strategy of Huckabee's has a very limited reach. I have to admit, I'm somewhat glad that Huckabee has switched to making biblical allusions, because before he did this, it was mostly a bunch of dog whistles about how terrible it is that women have the right to abortion. They weren't even subtle dog whistles. Witness his victory speech after he won the Iowa primary.
Because I'm still one who believes that the greatest generation doesn't have to be the ones behind us. The greatest generation can be those who have yet to even be born. And that's what we're going to see.
A And they're going to make sure that you're producing that generation frequently with the full force of government making sure you don't have a choice. It's nice to hear actual biblical allusions, because in all the obsession over abortion and gay rights coming from the religious right, you're hearing something with only a tentative relationship to the Bible. Now, I'm not religious, but I do know a thing or two about what's actually in the Bible. So as a public service to you fine folks out there, here's a guide to how much the Bible dwells on those topics that the religious right dwells on. Mentions of abortion in the Bible, 0. Mentions of gay marriage in the Bible, 0. Mentions of the evils of birth control in the Bible, 0. Mentions of the evils of STD protection in the Bible, 0. Mentions of gay sex in the Bible. Well, there are a couple, but it's roughly the same number as instructions not to cut your hair and to avoid eating shrimp. The importance of secluding women who are menstruating from the rest of the tribe is a big deal in the Old Testament, but you never hear much from the religious right on that one. I'd like to welcome Dr. Marty Klein to the program. Marty has been a sex therapist for 24 years and is also an activist against politicized sex phobias. His latest book, America's War on Sex, which shows how the government and the religious right use the regulation of sexual expression, entertainment, information, and healthcare to undermine our secular democracy. Welcome to RealityCast, Marty.
Hello.
I saw your presentation at the Sex Tech Conference about sex panics and the new internet technology. I found the history of sex panics around technology that reaches back to ancient times pretty fascinating. Can you give me some examples of various historical sex panics centered around technology?
Well, let's see. When the printing press was invented 400 or 500 years ago, which made possible the widespread distribution of literature, the upper classes got very nervous about the availability of erotic literature to the masses. That actually happened again in the 19th century with a kind of paperback book called The Penny Dreadfuls, which became available in Victorian England. And the thing that the upper classes said was, would you want your servant to be reading this trash? Sex panics with technology also happened with the invention of the car, which suddenly gave privacy to unmarried couples. And people got nervous about how they were going to use that privacy. And even around the turn of the century, with the electrification of downtowns, people were nervous that the fact that people could actually go downtown unchaperoned and engage in hand-holding or kissing or other erotic activities, people got very nervous about that.
And how about the bicycle? I found that particularly fascinating.
You know, the interesting thing about the bicycle was that before the bicycle was invented, in order for a middle-class American woman to leave the house, she had to put on about 25 pounds worth of clothes. And then after the bicycle was invented, she only needed about half that many clothes. So the bicycle had an enormous impact on the independence of women. And of course, any time any invention contributes to the independence of women, whether it's economic independence or political, or in this case, actually geographic independence, some people get very nervous about what's going to happen.
The internet has really given the right a lot to work with in terms of creating this sex panic. Who are their target audiences for these fears about sex and computer technology?
Well, the religious right and other conservative elements are using fear of sexuality as a way of driving all sorts of awful public policies. And the internet, as you say, is being used as the focus of a lot of these fears. So, for example, parents are being terrified that things like MySpace and Facebook and other social networking sites are just full of predators and full of people who want to, you know, encourage your kid to get on a bus and go to Peoria and have sex with some snarling 50-year-old man, which, of course, is not the case. So parents are a real target for the sex panic around the Internet. There's also a real issue around public libraries, where some people seem to be afraid that the public library down the street is a gathering place for perverts looking at pornography on computers in libraries. Even right here in San Jose, which is arguably one of the two or three most liberal large cities in the United States, there's now a fight over whether or not to put filters on the computers that are available to library patrons. One of the city council members is using this issue to advance his political career. So, again, the question that he's forcing people to answer is, are you in favor of porn at the public library?
How do you feel that contraception technologies fit in these sex panics and around technology?
Of course, contraception is a technology that allows people to engage in sexual intercourse without fearing pregnancy. And fear of pregnancy has been used as a way of dissuading people from being sexual for a very long time. So what contraception does is it, excuse me, what contraception does is it gives people more decision-making power. And so there are elements in American culture today who are actually trying to persuade people and have succeeded in persuading people that condoms, for example, are not effective. Condoms are an extraordinarily effective invention. Today's latex condoms are extraordinarily effective in protecting people from pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections. But there are people who, on the religious right, who are just committed to, well, the American Family Association, James Dobson's group, the Family Research Council, Tony Perkins' group, the Concerned Women for America, Jan LaRue's group. These are groups who are spreading the lie that condoms are ineffective, or that if people rely on condoms, they're taking their life into their own hands. They're taking horrible risks. And it's just a disgusting pack of lies.
In your book, you argue that sex panics lay the groundwork for dismantling our secular democracy in rather broad ways. Can you explain some of the connections between sex panics and other right-wing agenda items?
The ultimate goal of people who are using the issue of sexual repression is the ultimate goal is to dismantle secular democracy. The ultimate goal is to replace the secular tradition in the United States with public policy decision making that centers around so-called morality and so-called decency agendas. So the idea, for example, if we look at broadcast television comes into people's homes. And the government, the American government, has given itself permission to decide whether certain shows can come into your home based on its evaluation of what is obscene or what is indecent. So, for example, in other advanced democracies like France or Germany or Sweden or England, you can see women's bare breasts on television and it's no big deal, whereas in the United States you're not allowed to show that. Not allowed, not because of any scientific evidence that it's dangerous, not allowed because the government, in its infinite wisdom, has decided that it's just immoral. Not that it has any provable impact on people, but that it's immoral. And that's the link between erotic displays or erotic repression on the one hand and secular democracy on the other hand. Secular democracy is a very advance. It's a very radical idea. Secular democracy, liberal democracy, pluralistic democracy is a radical idea that I can do what I want in my house as long as I tolerate what you do in your house. That I can think and say what I want as long as I'm willing to tolerate what you think and what you say, whether I like it or not. That's a very progressive, that's a very radical kind of arrangement. And what today's religious right and conservative and decency and morality movements are attempting to do is they're attempting to overthrow that contract. And the way that they're doing that is by saying, you know, the way that you have access to sexual information or sex education or sexual entertainment or sexual products is not going to be allowed. Not because it's bad for you, not because it's bad for me, but because I just don't like it, because I don't find it to be morally acceptable. It's very, very dangerous.
And the FCC with television is a really good example of how a small minority can impose its will on a large minority, or a large majority, I'm sorry.
Right.
You gave a really good example at the Sex Tech Conference about Janet Jackson's breast on TV and how very few people cared about that. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, the various agencies of the federal government have been distorted into moral policing agencies. You know, it's not just the FCC, although that's a good example. The Federal Communications Commission was created in the 1930s as a technical agency. It was designed to help distribute broadcast frequencies and to make sure that technologically there wasn't chaos on the airwaves. That agency was over the years twisted into some sort of moral policing agency. The FCC is not the only federal agency that's been done with. For example, the Food and Drug Administration, which was originally designed to protect the American public from unsafe products. The Food and Drug Administration now is being used as a vehicle for the government to patrol people's sex lives. So the product emergency contraception, which actually helps prevent pregnancy after unprotected intercourse, which is just a modern technological marvel that human beings have prayed for 20,000 years. Now, the Food and Drug Administration takes it on itself to say that we're concerned about allowing people to have access to emergency contraception over the counter because it might lead to promiscuity. That's the word that the federal government and the religious right has been using, promiscuity, that the prevention of promiscuity has been a legitimate public policy goal. And that's just crazy. So the Food and Drug Administration was being used as a way of not protecting people's safety based on scientific information, but protecting people's morality based on religious or moralistic judgments about what's moral and what's not moral. Alcohol beverage control commissions, which every state in the union has one, they're being used now as a fulcrum for patrolling people's sexual behavior. So, for example, California has a very active swingers community, and when as I say in my book, America's War on Sex, the story that unfolded in San Diego when a swingers convention wanted to meet in the Town and Country Hotel in San Diego. You may have been in that hotel, perfectly nice hotel. Swingers convention wanted to meet there. The Alcohol Beverage Control Commission came down there and said, if you allow the swingers convention to meet at your hotel, we're going to pull your license to serve alcohol. Even though the Swingers Convention did not serve alcohol, the ABC, which was a state policing agency, the ABC said, we believe that having a Swingers Convention in your hotel is immoral, so we're going to exert our pressure to try and prevent you from doing that, even though the event that we're objecting to is not going to serve any alcohol. So there's another example of how pressure on people's sexual expression is being used to undermine the secular progressive tradition of letting people do what they want as long as they're not hurting anybody else.
If you'd like to learn more, please visit sexed.org or sexualintelligence.wordpress.com. Read Marty's websites. Thank you for coming on to RealityCast.
Thank you.
Now, here's a story that really illustrates what Marty Klein is talking about in this week's interview. Two St. Louis teenagers had their freedom of speech violated by their junior high school, with the evil sex as the cover story to justify this unconstitutional oppression of student rights.
15-year-old Tori Shoemaker and 14-year-old Cheyenne Bird were back in school today after being told to stay home for this, two homemade shirts that caused quite a stir at Lewis and Clark Junior High School.
We are supporting safe sex, and we shouldn't get suspended for something we believe in because it's freedom of speech.
That's not how officials at schools saw it. What they saw were the shirts proclaiming a safe sex or no sex slogan and decorated with packaged condoms. The students wanted to prove a point, since there is an abstinence-only curriculum at Lewis and Clark.
It's interesting to me that the shirts that caused the fuss weren't anti-abstinence. The shirts didn't say, every day is hump day, or everyone get to fornicating. The shirts had a straightforward health-based message. If you can't use a condom, don't do it at all. What this affirms to me is not that abstinence-only is about health, or even really so much about abstinence. It's about a deeper anti-contraception agenda. The counter message to the shirts is, in essence, don't do it, but if you do, for God's sake, don't protect yourself. You deserve to suffer for being a sinner.
The point had a price, a 2-day suspension for both. The superintendent told us he considers the shirts inappropriate and a distraction at school.
The ACLU and other civil liberties organizations probably don't have the resources to take this case on, which is too bad, because I think the girls have cause for action. It seems to me that the precedent on the case would be the 1969 Supreme Court decision on Tinker versus Des Moines schools. The majority found in a 7-2 decision that the disruption excuse, which this principal uses here, doesn't give the school a right to shut down symbolic protests by the students. At issue was high school students who were suspended for wearing black armbands protesting the Vietnam War and calling for peace. The court found the students had a right to engage in political protest in school, so long as the protest was what they called pure speech, instead of genuinely disruptive behavior. What was permitted, and I quote the decision, is silent, passive expression of opinion, unaccompanied by any disorder or disturbance on part of the petitioners. Describes this situation to a T. So what the school did is not only wrong, but blatantly illegal. Now, our courts are more conservative than they were in the 60s, but I don't think Tinker really stands a chance of something like a reversal. CNN gets a parent perspective.
At least one parent says he supports his daughter.
They're teenagers. You know, I'm realistic. I mean, yeah, I'd like to see them not do it at all until they get married, but today's society, look at all the teenagers coming up pregnant.
I'm glad he supports the message of the shirts, because it's the right message. But even if it was not a good message, the shirts should be protected as a matter of free speech. Getting back to the interview earlier, this is how the state starts to chip away at your rights. The sex paranoia that justified suspending these girls gave cover to what was essentially an illegitimate power grab by school officials. And now for the wisdom of wingnuts. First, a bit of follow-up on last week's show, which mentioned the birth control protection bill in South Dakota that legislators were avoiding addressing. Well, they finally sucked it up and dealt with it by refusing to pass it. In honor of this blatant demonstration that they're basically trying to ban sex for pleasure, here's a clip from the American Life League explaining just that. The host shows a bunch of clips from kicky fun Planned Parenthood ads that commit the grave sin of admitting that contraception is generally used for sex.
But this isn't the only advertising campaign made possible with public money to promote Planned Parenthood's business agenda. Planned Parenthood has used images of recreational sex in order to boost its business in previous ad campaigns, including condoms on keychains and condom lollipops given to young people. At your expense.
Oh, all right!
Reminder, Planned Parenthood is a non-profit. They are not a business. Therefore, they are not selling sex to make money. But I like this clip because it's so blatant about the anti-choice agenda. He's angry because Planned Parenthood makes it possible for other people to have sex for fun, full stop. This ad is doing exactly what they accuse Planned Parenthood of doing, using salacious images to raise money. Planned Parenthood wants you to protect yourself, but American Life League wants your money to strip you of your basic rights. I don't think I should have to defend Planned Parenthood for being upfront about the facts that you use a condom during sexual intercourse. But if they hinted around it, they'd never be able to reach a young audience that's bombarded day in and day out with sexual imagery.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Check. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.